Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. Hey, this is Cale Clark. Welcome back to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio mobile app. This is our new series. It's called Bonding with James. I'm a big 007 fan, and yes, that's a pun, but I'm talking about not a secret agent, but somebody who is a secret, not really well known to a lot of people in the church, James. Now, this is James, the so-called brother of the Lord. He's not a son of Mary, not another son of Mary like Jesus. We dealt with that in the last episode, so if you missed that, check the podcast. You can go to relevantradio.com. And you can also, of course, go to the Relevant Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts and you can stream it, share it. So let's now look at something else. When it comes to James, you might be asking, which James? There are so many of them in the New Testament. There were a lot of Jameses in the first century world. It kind of reminds me of an old song by a comedy sketch group called The Kids in the Hall. And it was called These Are the Daves I Know. These are the Daves I Know, I Know. These are the Daves I Know. Well, it's kind of like that with James. So these are the James I know and that you know. So let's differentiate the James that we're talking about from all the other Jameses in the Bible. And first of all, when it comes to all these guys, their names are not actually James. In Hebrew, the name would be Yaakov, right? You might remember the comedian Yaakov Smirnov. Well, Yaakov, of course, is Jacob. Okay, Yaakov in Hebrew is Jacob, actually, in English. Well, you might be asking, well, hold on here, then where does James come from? Well, it has to do with the way that biblical translation happened throughout history. Okay, so in Hebrew, the name is Yaakov. In English, it should be Jacob. And in fact, all of the guys named James in the New Testament, their real name is Jacob. Now, in Greek, Jacobus, or Jacob, was translated eventually into Latin as Jacomus. Now, when Latin eventually got translated into Spanish, that's where Jaime came from. And then Jaime becomes James. How did that happen? Well, you might have heard of the famous King James version of the Bible. When it came out in 1611, what happened was the earliest translators in English would sometimes use the names in Latin or other languages of Europe when doing their Bible translations. So the King James Version in English, which came out in 1611, translated the name as James. So they kind of got it from Jaime, if you will. So that's how it got into your English translation of the Bible. But it's really important now to look back on why the name Jacob, or Yaakov, why it was actually important to the Jews. Well, in Matthew's gospel, which is very much targeted towards Matthew's fellow Jews to try to convince them that Jesus is the Jewish Messiah, we see the genealogy of Jesus. Now, in the first couple chapters of Matthew, it sounds a little bit like reading a phone book, if you remember those things. You know, nobody really has them anymore with smartphones, but just pages and pages. Think of the white pages of all these names and phone numbers. Well, that's what it kind of seems like at first when you're reading the genealogy of Jesus in Matthew, but it has a great theological point. We don't have time to really get into this right now, but look at the very first verse of Matthew's gospel, Matthew chapter 1, verse 1. It says, the book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Now look at verse 2. It says, Abraham was the father of Isaac, and Isaac the father of who? Jacob. And Jacob the father of Judah and his brothers. So right here, we've got a couple of Jacobs in Matthew chapter 1. The next one's going to come a little bit later on, but we have, first of all, in verse 2, we have the patriarch Jacob, who, of course, was the son of Isaac and the grandson of Father Abraham. Now, Jacob, his children, his sons, were the fathers of the, you know, they're basically the 12 tribes of Israel. So he's the father of the patriarchs of Israel. Now, later on, let's look down here in chapter 1 of Matthew to verse 16. Matthew 1:16. It says, there's another Jacob. Jacob, the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom Jesus was born, who is called Christ or Messiah. That's what Christ means. It means Messiah. It's not Jesus' last name, okay? So hang on here. There's this other Jacob. So now, in the last episode, we looked at the question of who are these quote-unquote brothers and sisters of Jesus in the New Testament. The James that we're concerned about is known as the brother of the Lord. Now, one of the solutions to this problem, and I'm not saying this is the right answer, but one of the solutions to this problem that's compatible with the Catholic faith is that essentially they are stepbrothers, stepsisters of Jesus. They're children of Joseph from a previous marriage. He was a widower when he became the guardian and protector of Mary and married Mary. So that's one way to come up with a solution to this problem. So if that is the case, and I'm saying if, I'm not saying that it is, but it could be that this Jacob was, in fact, James's grandfather. So he could have been named after his grandfather if that was the case. Certainly the name of the patriarch Jacob comes up here for sure. So what about all these other people named James in the Gospels? Well, of course, probably the one that most springs to mind for most people is James, the son of Zebedee. Remember the Zebedee brothers, the Zebedee and Sons Fishing Company, if you will, their father and the two boys, James and John. Now, of course, John becomes the Apostle John. James, this guy is known as James the Greater. Now, this is also something that used to confuse me growing up. Who is James the Greater? And who is James the Less? Okay, so James, the son of Zebedee, the brother of John the Apostle, Jesus also called them by another name, Boanerges, which means sons of thunder, because they just wanted to call down lightning and thunder on all the towns that rejected Jesus. Well, James, the son of Zebedee, is known as James the Greater. What about James the Less? He is one of the other apostles, okay? So he's also an apostle. He is James, the son of Alphaeus. Now, why is he called James the Less? James the Less. Well, that's another way of saying James the Younger, okay? You can look at Mark chapter 15, verse 40. So he was probably younger than the other James. Now, there's another James, if you can, wow, there's just more. They just keep coming. James, the father of Jude and Thaddeus. Okay, these are two other apostles of Jesus, Jude and Thaddeus. Okay, now Jude's name is actually Judas. Okay, Judas was a very, very common name for men in the first century Jewish world. But obviously, after what happened with Judas Iscariot, another one of the disciples, nobody wants to be identified with that guy after Easter. So all the guys that are named Judas, generally speaking, they would just say after that, just call me Jude. Just call me Jude. I don't want to be associated with that guy. So Jude and Thaddeus, their father, is another James. Okay, and then finally we have James, the guy we're talking about in this series, bonding with James, the one who is called, quote-unquote, the Lord's brother, who writes the letter of James in the New Testament, becomes, of course, the Bishop of Jerusalem, becomes a martyr for Jesus Christ. Now, according to the Anchor Bible Dictionary, which is a pretty solid academic reference work that's well known to a lot of people, in the Anchor Bible Dictionary, there is an entry on the name James. It actually says there that there could be as many as seven people in the New Testament with the name of James. It was a really, really popular name for boys in the first century. So, given the fact that, and Ben Witherington talks about this, given the fact that people don't have last names in the first century Jewish world, in Roman Palestine, how in the world can you tell one James from another? Well, there's a few different ways to do it. One way is through what we call patronymics. It's who your father is. You know, patrology, pater means father. So patronymics is when somebody says, so-and-so is the son of so-and-so. So, for example, James, son of Joseph, or Simon bar Jonah. Bar means son of in Hebrew. Simon, son of Jonah. Okay, so that's one way, who your dad is. We also have nicknames that are given to people. So, for example, Simon becomes known as Kephas or Rocky, like our own father Rocky here at Relevant Radio, or Rock. It's a nickname. Kephas means rock, Petros, okay? So he becomes known as Peter. Simon becomes Peter because that's his nickname, Rocky. Also, the way that people looked, the way they sounded, the way they were, you could describe somebody as being younger, such as James the Less or James the Younger, or sometimes people were called by their stature, the little one, or something like that. Another way that you could identify different people who had the same name was, you know, where their hometown was, where they were from. So, for example, Jesus of Nazareth. You say, well, what isn't Jesus of Nazareth unique? Of course he's unique. He's the God-man. Of course he's absolutely unique. But Jesus, in fact, was a very common name in the first century as well. It simply means Joshua. Okay, so Jesus means Joshua. Of course, a Joshua from the Old Testament comes to mind. So Jesus of Nazareth. There were many other guys named Jesus in the first century too. So that's ways that you could tell people apart. Okay, so the James that we're looking at in the series Bonding with James, and you're listening to The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. I'm your host, Cale Clark. So this James that we're talking about, whose real name really was Jacob, was the quote-unquote brother of the Lord, and Paul calls him this, St. Paul calls him this in Galatians chapter 1, verse 19. Paul goes to visit him and Peter in Jerusalem to find out more about Jesus. In the early church, he was also known as James the Just. We talked about this in the last episode. And of course, there is the James ossuary. We'll have more on the ossuary later in the series, the bone box, the limestone bone box from the first century that in all likelihood belongs to this James. It's an incredible first century artifact, maybe the first written evidence of the name of Jesus, where he's called the son of Joseph, the brother of Jesus. And so when it comes to this guy, why he's important and why we wanted to look at him in particular is because this is kind of a follow-up from our Easter series. And in the Corinthian Creed, in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, St. Paul specifically says that Jesus made a resurrection appearance to James. And the reason why he had to do that, in all likelihood, is because James did not believe in Jesus prior to Easter. So let's look at some reasons for this. Let's look at John chapter 7 really quickly. In John chapter 7, verses 2 through 5, it says, "Now the Jewish festival of booths was near." That's also known as the festival of tabernacles. "So Jesus' brothers said to him, 'Leave here and go to Judea so that your disciples also may see the works you are doing. For no one who wants to be widely known acts in secret. If you do these things, show yourself to the world.' For not even his brothers believed in him." Okay, that's John chapter 7, verses 2 through 5. And this suggests that the relatives of Jesus, and again, I don't want to belabor this point. I dealt with this in more detail in the first episode, so you can check this out. But James is not a son of Mary. Okay, I do think he's a relative of Jesus, though. So in terms of what the word brother might mean, go to the first episode, and I don't want to waste too much time here talking about that. But we can say that there seems to be a bit of hostility here. One would have to assume that James was part of this crowd who doesn't necessarily buy into Jesus at this point, pre-Easter. If you think you're really somebody, then go to Jerusalem, go to the feast. That's where prophets kind of do their thing. And so this kind of sheds a little bit of light on what James's background and Jesus's background in Galilee must have been like too, because obviously Jewish people would go to the major feasts in Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the center of the Jewish world. It's the cultural center of the Jewish world. But in Galilee, where Jesus grew up, in the north, which is another province north of Jerusalem, life was a lot different. Don't forget that Galilee, the area of Galilee, was ruled over by one of the sons of King Herod, who tried to kill Jesus when he was an infant. We all know this from Matthew's gospel, the Christmas narrative. But Herod was called the King of the Jews, Herod the Great. He loved that title. He called himself that. And one of his sons, Herod Antipas, Herod Antipas is probably better known for inventing antipasta. No, I'm only kidding. He really didn't. I just threw that in as a joke. So Herod Antipas was one of the sons of Herod the Great, who was one of the tetrarchs. Herod, when he died, his kingdom was split up into four. And Herod Antipas rules over what's known as Galilee. And so really the Romans are ultimately in charge, but they set up Herod Antipas as kind of a puppet ruler. Okay, you can kind of rule in our place over this area, but we're really the ones in charge. Now, Herod Antipas, like his dad, was really an Idumean. He wasn't fully Jewish, but he was Semitic. But he wasn't fully Jewish, but he was really into what's known as Hellenization. And this is this idea that he really wanted to promote Greek culture, Greek customs. So even in Galilee, very, very close, just a few miles north of Nazareth, where Jesus was brought up, there's a city called Sepphoris. And if you've been to the Holy Land, maybe you've seen it, it's pretty rare that Holy Land tours will take you there, but maybe one day you can go with me and I'll take you there. Sepphoris is a really, really interesting city. But this is one of the cities that Herod Antipas tried to make this Greek city in the middle of Galilee. And it was even called by some historians the Jewel of the Galilee. And so, but this Hellenization really kind of annoyed and angered a lot of Jewish people who lived there because it kind of messed with the purity of their religion. In fact, Jesus was no fan of Herod Antipas. And later in the gospel, Jesus, as he's on his way to Jerusalem, on his way to face his death, somebody says to him, "Hey, Herod's trying to get you." And Jesus says, "You tell that fox," you know, he called him a fox. He was not fond of him. I'm going to preach, I'm going to heal, I'm going to do exorcisms today and tomorrow, and then I'm going to reach my goal. I'm going to reach my goal, and this I'm not afraid of you, basically. So this is kind of the tension between Galilee and what was going on with Herod Antipas and the way things were in the capital city of Jerusalem, capital of Judea. So Jesus probably went to Sepphoris with Joseph to do a lot of work. There were a lot of building projects there that Herod Antipas started up. The theater in Sepphoris. Maybe that's where Jesus got this whole idea of the hypocrites, the play actors. We've talked about this previously on The Faith Explained. There's also evidence that a lot of carpentry-type work was going on in Sepphoris. There's evidence of a furniture being made that's been pulled out by archaeologists, and also literary evidence of manufacture of furniture in this area. We know from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 6, verse 3, Jesus was called a carpenter. The family trade was passed on from father to son. Joseph is called a carpenter as well in the Gospel in Matthew 13, 55. Now, if James was a son of Joseph by a previous marriage, and I'm not saying that he was, but if that is the case, it's quite possible that James himself was also a carpenter, and he might have worked in this town as well. Now they were not poor. They were not dirt poor. They were probably, I would say, middle class. They had a lot of work to do. There was a lot of work to be had. They weren't tenant farmers. They weren't day laborers. Jesus tells this parable of day laborers who just kind of show up at a job site hoping to find work. They weren't in that boat. There was a lot of work to be had in the city of Sepphoris, and also in Sepphoris there was a lot of wheat production. So it's possible that some relatives of Jesus were involved in that. Agriculture. Jesus tells a lot of parables about farming. And in James's letter in the New Testament, he compares farming with the spiritual life. So that's all really, really important. But we do know this. There seems to have been a lot of tension between Jesus and James prior to Easter. And when Jesus is preaching in his hometown in Mark chapter 6 in Nazareth, it could be James as one of the people Jesus has in mind when he says a prophet is always rejected among his own relatives, within his home city, and even within his own house. They didn't necessarily see eye to eye. James didn't exactly buy into who Jesus was. It took Easter to change all of that. We're going to find out how in the next episode of our series, Bonding with James. It's The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. I'm your host, Cale Clark. If you missed an episode, check the podcast, share them with a friend, and we'll see you in the next episode of the series tomorrow on Relevant Radio. God bless you.